I grew up in a small town in northern Ontario and in the 1940s. And the town dealt with an organized kind of situation it was now. Just people drove up there, threw all the stuff in one spot, and it piled up over the years, and it became the town dump. And because there was bootleggers, there were whiskey bottles. And so as young bucks, we used to go out there with our rifles, and we would target practice, shooting off the tops off of whiskey bottles that the Indians would brew up out there on Big Chief Island, and then they'd sell to the local Yehudis, sort of a white lightning kind of deal. Well, it grew hair on your tongue, they would say. I never believed that, but it didn't grow hair on my tongue. So anyway, though, we'd be out there firing our rifles, and that went on for a while. But then, as luck would have it, the bear population, which lived outside the town, but were very orderly. They weren't unruly bears, and people just pretty much put up with them. You know, they didn't come into town, but they roamed around out there in the hills. And so if you're picking blueberries out there, let's say it's blueberry time, I can't remember exactly now, maybe July, something like that, July, nice heat, up on the Precambrian Shield. See, up that area, it's all rock. And so it's called the Precambrian Shield, and because it's rock, then all the water just flows down towards the Great Lakes. And so every time there's a dip, there's a lake. And then on top of this rock, you had sort of topsoil, but not a great deal. It wasn't very good farming country. Just mostly rocks. But you would have blueberries. So they grew up there on the rocks in the big warm sun. And you know, come out there with Grandma and a couple of, she's out there in her apron, and I've got a couple of buckets, and we're working one side of the hill, and there's the berries working the other side of the hill, because they love berries. Oh. And he was just, a bear would just take his paw and swipe right through the berry patch and eat the whole thing. Just jam it right in his mouth. One time I found, out in the woods, I found a bear and shit out a whole cantaloupe, and it hadn't even chewed the thing up. And I thought to myself, now there was a struggle, folks. Try that little trick at home. So in any event, though, so the bears took over the garbage pit after a while during my period of time there, and they became a nuisance, because you would go down there with your beer, whiskey bottles and your loads of whatever, old refrigerators, and toss it all out there. And the bears would become cranky, and they would want to look in the back of the truck to see what else you had there. And so you're trying to whack the bear with your cross stick, and the bear is like grunting and got a pallet going, and the two of them are trying to peer into the truck. So this required a meeting of the town, really. And so the elders of the town got together, and they decided that, we need to hire somebody, a bear expert, to come in here and disperse the bears so we can get back to dumping our garbage anywhere we wanted to, but basically in a pile somewhere out there. So, so they hired a guy, and I'm a kid, and I'm there, and, so the guy comes, and he talks to the town, and he tells the town what he's going to do. He's going to set up some huge noise-making machine down there, which when he presses the button, he's going to be up on the hill. When he presses the button, the thing is going to make a great roaring, roaring sound, and the bears will all run away, and everybody will be happy. We can go back to throwing out the old mattresses. But in any event, some people are they're thinking, that's a damn good idea, and why didn't I think of that? But then they go, and they give the guy some money, and so he goes off, and he sets a scene up. Well, the bears, they don't tolerate, they don't pay attention to them. They're busy rooting through the old plastic there and trying to fish out all the banana peels they can find. And but the town decides that this is going to be a spectacle. And as such, people went to the dump on the day of the great debarring of the dump, and they're going to watch. They're going to watch the fucking bears run. And so the pit itself was in a bit of a gravel pit area, a little lower down. So it was a kind of a ridge of gravel and shrub, older vegetation all over. I've been there for a long time. But But it was a dip down, and so you can get down into it, you had to drive down, and then you could drive out. So, but the people gathered around the rim of the thing, pretty much, and well, people came. Yeah, lots of people came. I went. And so there we were, all of us out there together, and some people had their crack, you know, their white lightning bottle, and then it's like 4 in the afternoon, and people are happy and singing a song and just carrying on, and here comes the guy with his machine. And so we're all watching now, and we're all looking down into the gravel pit area there where the dump is. It's pretty lot of stuff, eh? But there's about 19 bears. And they're crowding around and pushing each other and just being bears, really, and not threatening or nothing like that. So, in any event, so down the guy goes, and he gets out of his machine there, and he takes it out of the back of his truck, and he sets the thing up, and he got a bunch of wire, and he starts unwinding the wire, and the bears aren't paying him any attention at all. They just went over once, a couple of them, peered in the back of the truck to see if there's any, you know, old cantaloupe, looking for another time of your life, but a cantaloupe, and then, no, nothing there, so off they go. And the guy must, if he had lunch, he probably had it locked up in his truck. I mean, they came there. I mean, they can smell a ham. A bear can smell a ham sandwich a mile and a half away. But in any event, he's there. He unwinds this thing. Has an assistant. Gives the plunger, ideally, to his assistant, who runs up the hill amongst us. And then the guy gets back in his truck, and he drives up out of there. And now we have the tableau. We have a little dip in the planet there, a little dip, and down in that little dip is a whole bunch of garbage and stuff, and it's being worked over by a bunch of bears, a few of them. And they're pretty studying the thing and looking at it and pushing each other around, because that's what they do. And we're all up there having a wee, well, I was a kid, so I wouldn't have very much, but we're all having a wee draft of the old white lightning, and, you know, it's mostly a men's occasion. This wasn't a dressing up again. We're going to the fucking dump here. So people didn't dress up. They just wore their work boots and their regular schmutzkies and all. And so, we're ready. We're all lined up. We're all ready there. Well, nobody really thought of what was going to happen. I mean, in small towns, there are some people who try to figure out what's going to happen next. But the major mentality of the moment in the 40s in rural northern Canada was, well, how are we doing at the moment? And the moment was an important gig. And so, yeah, so how are we doing at the moment? We're all doing fine. We're having a... And there we are looking down, and... the thing goes boom. The thing goes boom. Boom. And wow. Well, the fucking bears. You ever seen a bear run? Well, they vault. They don't run. They run. They vault, and they vault very, very fast. I mean, while you're thinking about this bear is coming right at me, the bear is now passed through you, has got part of your shirt, and is running like hell for where the cars were parked, and right on past them, straight out into the fucking woods. And that's exactly what happened here. The bears took off, running straight up the hill, vaulting straight up the hill, and they could vault up the hill really quickly. And the guys, who were all lounging around, and the trucks and everything are down back below there a bit, they run right through us, the fucking bears, and they knock people on their fannies, and a couple of little Tiz Miller, he brought his kid there, and the fucking kid gets stepped on. No danger. I took him to the hospital, of course, but he recovered after a while. But I don't think he ever went to the dump again. I wouldn't have in his case. But anyway, a lot of people got knocked around, and everybody's feeling really sheepish now. I mean, they should have figured this fucker out, but they didn't. So now we're all driving back to town, and people are heading from the Empire Hotel to the beer parlor part, and we're there going to discuss what happened here with the bear, this Bozo squad, and the guy was toasting everybody. Then the fellow who had the boomer, he came in there to the tavern, and everybody toasted him and sang him a good old song, hooray, hooray for pipe and drum, that sort of stuff. But, yeah. But, unfortunately, these things never really quite work out, because what we don't take into account is the other side thinks about what just happened. And I'm sure that after the bears run over all of us and knock the fender right off the one guy's 38 Plymouth. It wasn't a shitty old car anyway. But a bear banged right into it at full speed, and the bear weighs 300 or 400 pounds. Bam! There's a dinner-rooney right there, folks. And so the bears regrouped, though. They went hacking in the woods, and after a while, they ate some berries and did that sort of thing and scared the shit out of elderly ladies with their grandchildren. But beyond that, they regrouped, and they had another go. They had another go at the dump. And I don't know, I had now grown up to the point where I was 17, ready to leave town and go to the city and get a job in a factory. So I was done with the dump and the whiskey bottles and the bears. And shooting the bears, I don't think they were going to do that. You couldn't shoot the bears. Unless they were cranky, unless you had a reason. You can't run around and just kill the animals. People don't allow that. But anyway, the bears took over, back over the deal, and that was the story there. Finally, though, this will be a short one. So I'm living in Toronto, downtown Toronto, and working in the factory, and I live in a little rooming house down there, and we're right by the railway tracks, and the road goes under the tracks, a little dip in the avenue there, goes under the tracks. It's a two-lane road. Street in the city street, and it goes under the tracks, and tracks go straight across. And there's an under part, and there's a walkway on both sides, and it's, 40 or 50 yards long, enough for three or four railway tracks. And the problem was that pigeons took over inside the thing. So they were sitting up on the rafters, and so as a result, they were pooping on anybody who walked across, and they were pooping on all the cars. In fact, they became quite a problem there for the Toronto civic authorities. And so how to deal with all these pigeons, because there didn't seem to be any way to get rid of them. No noise, no nothing. Fire water on them. They just kept coming back. But once again, big thinkers, they decide to hire an expert. And the expert comes in and says, what we need here, what pigeons are scared of, completely scared of, is owls. Owls are going to be the situation here. We're going to put two stuffed owls up in the rafters there, and all the pigeons and the gulls are going to go and be somewhere else. Well, everybody said, well, all right then, and they looked it up in a book, and it said, owls scare the piss out of all those kind of scavenger birds. So, then the guy was hired right on the spot, and it didn't take him long to scuffle up two stuffed owls, and he set them up I'm living right there, so I got an eye on this deal, and he sets them right up there on the little rafters, and away he goes. Hey, no problem anymore. So he's right. The birds all left the place. There weren't any birds. There were quite a few on the telephone wires, and there were quite a few on the streets around there sitting in the trees. But there was a calm. And I'm thinking to myself one afternoon, I'm working the midnight shift, so I got the afternoons off, and I'm sitting there looking out the window at the birds and thinking to myself, well, they haven't gone anywhere. They're thinking about these owls. So I'm thinking to myself, well, if I was one of these birds, I'd have a spy watching these owls to see if they moved. How long can one owl stay in one spot for, like, a week and a half without fluffing a feather and doing nothing? So that's exactly what they did. It took them about a week and a half to study the situation there. Well, even shorter than that, really. And then they mustered the crew. So one morning, I looked out the window, and man, there was gulls and pigeons everywhere. And I think to myself, uh-oh, this is going to be bad for the stuffed owls. And I was right about that. The birds attacked from both ends of the tunnel these two stuffed owls, and they wailed them and knocked them around and threw them down on the road, and the cars ran over them, and the birds took up in the rafters again. And at that point, I moved away because I thought, this is a way too busy for a guy who works the night shift.